Welcome to the CNS Leadership Institute podcast series, where we are discussing valuable lessons learned with leaders throughout the neurosurgical community. I am Dr. Wichu Adagwa, and today I am pleased to welcome Dr. Susan Durham to the podcast to share her insights on the topic of negotiation. This discussion will be moderated by Dr. Lola Chambliss of the CNS Leadership Institute. Dr. Chambliss is a neurosurgery residency program director and associate professor of neurological surgery at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. Dr. Chambliss has served in the CNS Executive Committee since 2017 and is the 2021 co-chair of the CNS Leadership Institute. Thank you, Dr. Durham and Chambliss, for sharing your insights with our audience today.
Hi, I'm Lola Chambliss with the CNS Leadership Podcast. Welcome to our latest conversation. We're going to be talking today with Dr. Susan Durham, and we're going to be talking about the art of negotiation for neurosurgeons. Dr. Durham is the J. Gordon McComb Family Endowed Chair and Chief of the Division of Neurosurgery at Children's Hospital of Los Angeles. She's also Professor of Neurological Surgery at the University of Southern California, Keck School of Medicine, and Co-Director of the Neurological Institute at Children's Hospital, LA. She completed her neurosurgery residency at the University of Pennsylvania and a fellowship in pediatric neurosurgery at CHLA. Prior to returning there in 2020, she served as the second female head of an academic neurosurgery program when, in 2016, she became chief of neurosurgery at the University of Vermont. Her academic interests include addressing gender-related issues in the neurosurgical workforce, improving the resident interview and selection process, and the creation of evidence-based practice guidelines. Throughout her career, she's been actively involved in the training of neurosurgery residents and fellows. Dr. Durham is the past chair of the Education Committee and current co-chair of the Webinars and Lectures Committee of the Section on Pediatrics for the AANS and CNS Joint Pediatric Section. She's on the board of directors for the Accreditation Council for the Pediatric Neurosurgical Fellowships and is a member of the Society of Neurological Surgeons. She resides in LA with her husband, Max, four children, and two dogs. Thank you so much for being here, Susan.
Thank you for inviting me.
My first question really should be how you manage all of that with four children and two dogs, but I imagine that that's probably a less of an issue of negotiation.
No, that's the art of the negotiation.
Well, I appreciate you being here and sharing your knowledge with us today. First, I'd like to ask, from the get-go, when you're thinking about entering a negotiation, how do you prepare?
I think one of the most important strategies I've learned over the years is you have to know your audience, because who you're negotiating with is really important, because you have to understand what's important to them, what's in it for them, what they're afraid of, and all the factors that might be unique to the, you know, the category of your audience. So I think you're going to have different approaches if you're negotiating with your faculty, with your staff, with hospital administration, or if you're negotiating for your own career. So you have to kind of tailor your negotiation strategy based on your audience. And another strategy I think that's really important, that you have to know yourself where you're prepared to draw the line in a negotiation. You have to know where your no-go part step is. And I think that's very important for guiding you during that period of negotiation. And you also have to be able to clearly articulate your needs and your vision, because, you know, you think of negotiation sometimes and you think it's just you're negotiating for specific things, where in reality, you really want to be able to negotiate about sort of the big picture and what your vision is and get people to follow that vision and to negotiate for the things you need to make that happen. And so, you know, you really kind of got to get people to believe in you and get behind you and what your vision is for yourself, for your department, for your staff.
So speaking to that, can you give us an example of a time that you were able to negotiate from that point of your vision that you're proud of, where you feel like things were really successful and you ended up with a win-win?
Yeah, when I was chief at University of Vermont, we needed a new stealth station, and we also wanted to get an O-arm for our spine surgeons. And in the state of Vermont, if it's above a certain amount, a certain dollar amount, you have to go actually to the board of trustees of the hospital, as well as a state board, in order to get your capital equipment request approved. And so, you know, this, who I was negotiating with was actually a bunch of, you know, hospital administrators, as well as lay people in the public that were on this Vermont state board. And they didn't really, you know, most people don't understand neurosurgery. And if I talked about, you know, screw placement in lumbar fusions, they wouldn't really understand what I was talking about. So I really tailored that to thinking about, like, hey, the stealth station comes with an Axiom workstation, which allows me as a pediatric neurosurgeon to put shunts in kids, and I don't have to put pins in. And so when I gave my presentation, I tailored it more towards, you know, showing them pictures of, you know, small children in Mayfield head frames versus, you know, in a gel donut with an Axiom, you know, reference lead on them. And that was really all I had to do. They didn't, you know, I didn't have to talk at all about, you know, spine instrumentation, but I really kind of tailored it to something that they would understand and something that they would, you know, really get behind and say, oh, I can see why you would need that. Rather than talking about, you know, X number of screws, you know, misplaced and, you know, the cost, you know, because when you get into these negotiations, sometimes, you know, people will want to know, like, the bottom line, what is this going to cost me? How am I going to, you know, recoup that cost of this equipment? And you really have to kind of think, you know, kind of beyond the obvious and try to go in for something that, you know, might not be obvious to everyone around you.
That seems like a great example of a time when you knew your audience. You know, do you practice ahead of time before a presentation like that? And if so, who's that audience?
No, I usually do it on the fly. But one thing that I've kind of learned over the years is just not to be afraid to appeal to the human side of people. You know, that's where you really make a connection with your audience. You know, if you just give them a bunch of facts and figures and you know, neurosurgical data, a lot of times they don't understand that. So particularly when you're not negotiating with neurosurgeons, you kind of got to change up your game a little bit, because, you know, people don't, you know, understand neurosurgery talk the way that we do.
Yeah. And a lot of times they're actually a little bit afraid of it.
Yeah. Most people are scared of it.
As they should be, maybe. So, you know, looking at the other side of the coin, can you talk to us about a negotiation that went poorly and what you learned from that?
Sure. When I was first asked to be the interim chair of neurosurgery at UVM, I was a pediatric neurosurgeon there, just sitting, you know, just basically following the typical, you know, academic progression. I was an associate professor, and the chief of neurosurgery went out on medical leave. And, you know, I was asked to be the interim, you know, chief of neurosurgery. And, you know, the first thing I said was, yes, of course I'll do it, you know, because in my head, all I could think about was the big picture of me being a female and me being, you know, named a leader of a neurosurgery program. You know, at that time, it was only Corinne Marasco who was, you know, female in charge of a neurosurgery program. And so, you know, in my head, I went to that big picture of like, oh my God, this is great. This is, you know, what I've always wanted. But yet I really failed to recognize what that position meant and what I could use that position for, you know, at UVM. Like, I didn't ask for anything. I didn't know what I needed to be successful as a leader. I didn't know what I needed to ask for my faculty, for my staff, for my residents that were in training. I mean, when I took that position, we didn't even have an administrative assistant in our division. So, you know, I could have asked for so many things and I didn't. And so, because I was just so, like, I was so caught up in what this meant to me, what this meant, you know, as a woman in neurosurgery.
Yeah, that really resonates with me, because I can imagine being in the same position and saying, this is my dream job and I don't want to let it go. And I'm going to, you know, grab this while I can. When in reality, I'm sure that, you know, they would have offered you that job with a lot of other a lot of other resources that you might have requested. And so if you were doing that again, and you were still in that position as an associate professor working your way up the ladder, and this is your dream job, how would you approach it? How would you recommend somebody approaches that differently now?
Because I think when you're negotiating for a leadership job or something that's other than, you know, yourself, when you're in a leadership job, you have to think about like other people and like what's going to make me a successful leader is going to be my faculty being successful, my staff being happy, you know, being able to recruit and retain, you know, not only faculty and staff. And also, like, what did I need? Like, I didn't know what I needed for hospital support, for, you know, what I needed from the university. I didn't know what I needed, like how much space I needed to have clinic in or how you did a lot of things. And in hindsight, I probably would have like thought about asking for help in that negotiation with some leaders that, you know, I would have probably, you know, probably should have called someone and said, hey, you know, I was offered this position. any advice you could give me? But I was pretty much just, you know, so honored and, you know, this was my dream job. Like, okay, I'll take it.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I wonder, do you feel like there are any gender dynamics that play a role in either that negotiation or other negotiations that you've had? Obviously, you know, women are, you know, somewhat of a super minority within neurosurgery and certainly within neurosurgical leadership. And I wonder if you think that means that negotiations for women are different or not.
I think that's a hard question to ask because a lot of it is, you know, society has sort of different, you know, rules for people and how they negotiate. And a lot of it's based on your gender. You know, women are not, you know, traditionally not, you know, or trained not to ask for things or, you know, don't make a fuss, you know, take what you're given, you know, that sort of thing has been traditionally how girls have been raised, unfortunately. And when you think of like how, when you negotiate, you're supposed to, you know, jump up and down and like, you know, these are all sort of masculine traits that people think about with successful negotiation. And I think that, I don't think that works necessarily for a woman. I don't think you can take the traits that are traditionally masculine and apply them to yourself and necessarily expect them to be viewed the same or perceived the same by the person you're negotiating with. And I mean, that's just one of the unfortunate truths is that if a woman, you know, is assertive or demanding or, you know, makes very specific requests, that tends to be viewed very differently than a male that may make the same things. So I think that's one of the things you just have to have in your mind, that there's a lot of societal expectations for, you know, how you're supposed to behave.
No, I think that's very real. I mean, it strikes me as you're describing that what you're really talking about is the need to be authentic and not try to put on a face that's not your own. Uh-huh. I can't imagine that I would be successful in a negotiation if I walked in and said, you know, I need to do this like a man would do it. That's probably not going to work. And so to some degree, I think maybe what you're saying is that, you know, you have to accept that each of us comes into a negotiation with our own kind of individual personalities and traits, and maybe leaning into that rather than trying to change that is a successful strategy.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, there's so many, you know, there's things that are written and, you know, courses you can go to about, you know, for women in leadership, particularly in healthcare leadership, about how to negotiate. And I'm not sure if that's helpful, because I agree with you that everybody is different and everyone has different expectations and a different story when they go in to negotiate. And I think, you know, ultimately when you're negotiating, you're doing it yourself, and you can't try to be anybody else or try to use, you know, tactics that, you know, you didn't use when you were like a little kid trying to get your mom to buy you something at the store. You know, how we negotiate is so ingrained into us that I think that, you know, I'm not sure if there's specific, you know, ways that I would recommend, you know, if you're a female, how to negotiate. I just think you have to be aware of some of the, you know, implicit biases that some people that you're negotiating with may have just because of your gender.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. And I think that the story that you told about the negotiation that you're proud of kind of gives an example of how, you know, you used maybe more traditionally female aspects of your personality. You know, you're talking about these, you know, children with the Mayfield pens, right? To really get your point across. And, you know, that's a place where perhaps being female is an advantage. I think it's maybe best not to look at it as an advantage or disadvantage, but just rather a facet of your own personality and your own experience. Would you agree?
I would.
So, you know, one of the things that people that are working through the CNS Leadership Institute will be dealing with is that they're often in a situation where they are managing up or negotiating up with a superior. But at the same time, sometimes for the first time in their career, they're negotiating, you know, with people that they are going to supervise. And that's a really different type of negotiation. Do you have any thoughts on how you strategize for those two different roles? As a chief, I imagine you were doing both of those things every day.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things about leadership is that, you know, your preparation for leadership is really minimal. You know, you learn by watching the leaders that you follow. You know, you in academic neurosurgery, you learn by like what your chair does, you know, but you don't know all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And it was fascinating to me, like in my first leadership role, is because I didn't realize like all the different aspects, like the people that I would have to be negotiating with. So you're like, you know, you're a personnel manager, you're kind of like your own HR department, and you're hiring faculty. So yeah, you are negotiating up, but you're also hiring your staff support, like you're hiring APPs. And so it's a very different, you know, negotiation techniques that you're using. And you also have to learn conflict resolution. And so, you know, we all know that neurosurgeons, there's conflict among neurosurgeons, but there's also like conflict that you can't believe that goes on between your clinical staff, your nursing staff. And you have to be able to negotiate sometimes that. And you're not, I mean, most of us have no formal, you know, management training when they, you know, people get into a neurosurgery, you know, leadership role. So I always tell people that it's kind of like being like a kindergarten teacher sometimes, that, you know, you just have to separate people and put them in their, you know, their separate corners and then try to negotiate truces within people. So I think that there are some skills that you do sort of learn just on the fly and on the job, but definitely different skill sets for negotiating up versus negotiating down. And you have to be able, again, to sort of know your audience. So when you're negotiating up, it's typically either it's usually with hospital administration or sometimes even people above that where you're asking for things. And that is a very different, you know, skill set than when you're negotiating to hire, you know, another faculty, or you're interviewing residents or fellows, because that again that's kind of a negotiation when we're doing, you know, fellow and residency interviews. And again, you have to understand like what's important to the person that you're negotiating with, or the person that you're, you know, trying to work something out with, because that's really what it's all about.
Are there any resources that you used or you know, have thought through over the years that you'd recommend in terms of ways to, you know, improve those leadership skills that were not taught in medical school and residency? Sorry, I'm asking you this one on the fly, but I just want to know it for myself.
I rely a lot on my former leaders. So, you know, Sean Grady from the University of Pennsylvania, I mean, I talk to him all the time about things, and he's been great. And you know, Gene Flam, you know, so I've talked to the leaders of, you know, that I followed when I was in residency and training. I think they've been very helpful. And also, you know, if you take a job, the person who was there before you is incredibly helpful. And, you know, in neurosurgery, we generally follow, you know, we follow each other. And there are people that have been in different institutions that you can get good advice for, advice from. And I also think that, you know, there's, you know, just being, I guess, let go of your ego and be able to actually ask for help, to say like, geez, that didn't go so well. How could I make that better? And that's sometimes hard for neurosurgeons, to like, you know, to think that, you know, you could have done something a little bit better because we're taught not to do that.
Yeah. Right before you said that, I was like, you know, it's about the openness, the willingness to ask for help.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting. I think our community is actually really interested in leaning in and helping and mentoring. But having that willingness to ask is a challenge.
It's wonderful how many mentors there are during your career, if you think about it, and how many people you can actually ask for, like, hey, how did you do this? Or, you know, I'm interested in, you know, pursuing this. How would you recommend I do that? And because a lot of people have really good ideas and are very, very helpful in how you do things. And I think that, you know, we tend to, as neurosurgeons, tend to kind of be rather insular people, you know.
And although we do know that we like to give our opinions a lot. So yes, that does make some sense.
We don't necessarily solicit advice from others very well.
Exactly. We're more likely to generate opinions than to ask for them.
Yes.
All right. I've got one last question for you. What is your advice for the young neurosurgeon that's negotiating their first job? I feel like this is an incredibly intimidating period where you are entering a negotiation at a huge disadvantage because you don't know anything about this process. You don't necessarily know your worth. How do you go about tackling that?
I think that's a really, really great question. And it's a hard question to answer because there's kind of two different answers. One is like, if you have to sort of figure out, are you pursuing a job in private practice or are you pursuing a job in academics? And, you know, we kind of know what to expect in academics because we all trained in an academic neurosurgery program and you kind of know what happens. Private practice is a completely, you know, foreign thing to most neurosurgery residents when they're finishing. And I think it's really important that they, you know, find people that are successful in private practice and talk to them. Because when you talk to your, you know, your attendings as a resident, they don't really know that much about private practice unless you're fortunate to be in a training program where they may have a little bit of, you know, some private practitioners actually interfacing with the residents. So I think number one, if you're interested in private practice, go talk to somebody who's in private practice to ask them. In academics, I think, you know, you kind of, you know, you get a lot of advice from your faculty and your chair, but I think most important is, you know, when you're going out there, everyone thinks about it's the salary, you know, you got how much money should I ask for? And that's always the awkward point, but it's so much easier now to actually get some numbers about, like, you know, what the average salary is, what the average RVU benchmarks are and things like that, depending on where you are in the country, what job, you know, title you have. So I think it's important that you have to go into a negotiation as a, you know, as a first time adult neurosurgeon and know your worth and actually have an idea of what seems to be a reasonable salary. And you also, you can't be afraid to ask for things because, you know, when my fellows go in to, you know, get their first job contract, they just look at the money. And I'm like, okay, what's your call responsibility? Do you have, like, and silly things, like, do you have an office? And they're like, well, I don't know. I'm like, did you ask? Do you have a secretary? Do you have a nurse? You know, the things that they see every day and they think that just comes with the package. They don't realize that unless you, like, sweat those small details and make sure that they're in your contract, you know, they might not be. And you may not have an office or you might be on call every day. So you have to really, you know, sweat those small details when you're negotiating for a job. And that's what I think everyone's so busy thinking about, like salary and things like that, that you really have to sort of realize that unless you ask for it, it is not guaranteed. And that is when you're negotiating for your job, you really have to, like, that's the time that you ask for stuff. So if you need something in the OR that your place doesn't have, you have to put that in your, you know, your wish list. So most programs will ask you, like, give me a wish list, and you'll have no idea what to put on that because you have no, you've never done that before. And so it's important just to ask someone, like, hey, or run it by someone, like, what are the things that I need to be successful in this job?
I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think it, you know, it comes down to the fact that what makes or breaks most people's career is not necessarily a little bit of a difference in salary. Most people's, you know, career at a given institution, it's the resources that they have to support them. And when people leave an institution, if it's not for promotion elsewhere, it's often because they just don't have the resources to do the work that they want to do. Well, I really appreciate your insights today. Thank you so much for, you know, lending us a little bit of your experience to the CNS leadership audience. I hope that we'll be able to have you back in other aspects of the Leadership Institute in the near future. And I just want to say thanks.
Thank you.